through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour, Jake and Stacy, is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. All right, jumping from the Mariners to the Seahawks, who begin their second open OTA practice today. So we're going to get some updates there. Practice begins at 12:15, just over an hour from now. And then you're going to hear, I believe, from Pete Carroll later today. You'll be able to hear some updates from those press conferences during Wyman and Bob, since it'll be near the end of our show. So before practice kicks off and before we hear from anyone, let's talk about the names we're hoping to hear from OTAs. Because here's my question for you. Which young Seahawks player is most important to this team's success in 2022? Young Seahawks player, the rule for this one, you better be in your first contract. I don't want to hear anyone say, maybe this guy. No, young Seahawks player, a new second year, maybe third year guy who is most important to this team's success in 2022. So basically, I got to that from thinking of, like, what are we hoping we hear today? And I was thinking of all these names that I was hoping we hear positive things about, and I realized that the common thread is they were all young guys that are playing on rookie deals that I'm really hoping can make a huge impact for this team. So that's where we're moving the conversation right now. Send your answer to that question in 206-421-3776, the Mac and Jack's text line. Jake, who are some names you were thinking of?
Well, birthday girl, the
it's my birthday today.
The player to me that stands above everyone else is Daryl Taylor. You're talking about the young player that you need to step up the most, the young player that needs to have the biggest role in this team at a premium position that can greatly impact this team in a positive way is Daryl Taylor. And Daryl Taylor, obviously, we know his start to his NFL career. Injury-ridden, not being able to get himself healthy, having to have surgery, and everyone's worried that this may be another Seahawk bust. Mm-hmm. He comes out this last year, and to start the season, he had four straight games recording a sack. I mean, just immediately is someone who found contribution onto this team and was deserving of more and more opportunities. And so when you look at Daryl Taylor, he finishes with 6.5 sacks, 37 total tackles, 7 tackles for loss. I mean, this is a guy that, in my opinion, when I watch him, he has all of the makings of being a one of the next young, great pass rushers in this league. Explosive, intense, violent to the football, and has a real knack for being able to generate pressure on the quarterback. Now what you need Daryl Taylor to be is not just that guy, but just also to develop his overall game and not just be a great pass rusher, but be a great overall player. Be as disruptive in the running game as you are in the passing game. And if he can develop into that type of player, Stacy, and he can grow and he can become a double-digit sack type of player, this allows your defense under Clint Hurt to be more aggressive, to play more aggressively. It allows Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs and your young corners to feel comfortable taking risks on in terms of jumping routes, because you know the ball has to come out of the quarterback's hands. And if Daryl Taylor can lead the charge, it can help make everyone else better. If you don't have that guy, then you just have a rotation without a frontline guy that really causes problems for opposing teams.
It feels like that guy is especially important for Pete Carroll's transition to more of a 3-4 base defense as well, as you got to have those outside edge rushers, right? Like, you've got your big guys up front, but if you don't back it up with guys who can get to the quarterback, then you've just got a slow defense who can maybe stop the run, but otherwise isn't generating a lot of pressure. I would say that my answer to that would be Jordan Brooks, who is still a young player on
really?
His rookie deal and is going to be, listen, is going to be taking over play calling duties, not just from Cody Barton, who had those at the end of last year, but obviously from Bobby Wagner. However, maybe I'm being biased in the importance of different positions that I see in today's NFL, but I think that a great outside corner and a great edge rusher can have more of an outsized impact on the success of a defense even than a really, really solid linebacker. So I think even a fantastic year from Jordan Brooks would be great. It would be fantastic. He's a first-round pick for you. But that it would be even better if you're talking about most important to the success to get a great year from Daryl Taylor. And I'll throw in, like, if you had drafted in the first round, you didn't have a shot at them because ultimately they were selected 3 and 4. But if you were to get in the first round Derek Stingley or Sauce Gardner, I would have said that guy. I would have said an outside corner.
Mm-hmm.
Right now you've got a lot of guys that can kind of exceed expectations that are late round draft picks, undersized guys, guys that we like. We like Trey Brown. We like Kobe Bryant. But I think that I'm going to also settle on Daryl Taylor. I'm going to settle on your edge rushers as just having an outsized impact on the success of your team and the success of your 3-4 defense.
Let me ask you this. You're not giving me a name on the outside corner because I know that's where you want to go. Why? Why are you not giving me a name? Stacey, you want to say outside corner. Why won't you say it?
There isn't a name that is like Sharpie. Write it in. That's who the guy is. And there frankly hasn't been since Richard Sherman. I mean, you had Shaquille Griffin as your regular starter there, but he was never a first-team All-Pro, which very few guys reach that career achievement, so understandable. But you haven't had that guy since Richard Sherman.
And that's a problem, right? When you talk about this team and where they want to go moving forward, it's not that they don't have confidence in that guy. What I would say is from the organization, the feeling is that guy is Trey Brown. They feel like that Trey Brown is going to be that guy from his rookie year. That sample size over those four games where he became the starter, they feel like Trey Brown has all of the tools and the ability to be a really good corner in this league.
I like Trey Brown. I am hesitant to buy into small sample sizes anymore because of how many times I feel like I've been burned by those.
And that's fair. That's totally fair. And I'm not saying that you should. But what I'm telling you is that if you're looking for a name to buy into, Kobe Bryant as a rookie transitioning and becoming that guy, that would be, although I have high hopes for him, and I think that he is somebody that would be a great addition to the secondary if he can put it all together, I believe that guy that they're banking on right now is Trey Brown. So you ask, you know, young guys that need to step up that are so important to this team, I would put Trey Brown in that category as one of those players, because they truly feel like that small sample size, as risky as it is to look at that and try to say, well, over the course of 17 games, that's who he's going to be as a young player. That's what they're banking on. And they need him going into his second year to make that leap, to make that step, to remain healthy and to be a solid contributor that is reliable on the outside, because they haven't even really had that since Richard Sherman.
Spencer, one listener, texting in saying, I feel great about our cornerback group right now. I love the stories of the cornerback group. Like, I look at it as if you were, I don't know, this is actually a bad analogy.
Let me ask this texter, why do you feel great about the group?
What I think is that there are many fans who look at it. First of all, I think that both a service and disservice for the Seahawks has been finding great defensive backs in late rounds, with Cam and Sherm being late round picks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's ended up almost coming back to bite them in terms of the narrative that people can allow themselves to look at. Now, I may be wrong. Send this into Cold Takes Exposed. If Spencer texting in right now is right and Kobe Bryant ends up being a star and Trey Brown ends up being a star, all I'll say is that while I like the talent and the promise and what they can be, if week one was tomorrow, I would be very nervous about the cornerbacks covering those Broncos wide receivers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, you know, Sidney Jones, he started to come alive in the last six games. He's a part of that competition, and he could earn himself that spot. But what I would say about Sidney Jones is that there is a limit to his overall ceiling, right? That he could be a good, solid starter for you in this league, and he's shown that, particularly the last six games. But he's not going to be that next elite guy. We have no idea what Kobe Bryant is going to be for this team. We have no idea. We haven't even seen him, you know, in preseason games. We haven't seen him in pads and training camp. We don't know, right? Obviously, you like the background. You like the mentality that he brings to the table, and certainly is one of my favorite draft picks that they made in this current draft. Trey Brown has a lot of promise. The one guy that you could say is a sure thing, as close to it as possible, as I think Justin Coleman will come in at nickel and play well. I do. Now, will he play as good as he did the first time around? I don't know. I mean, he was younger. He was 24, 25 years old. You know, but he's, you know, at age 29, he did contribute for some really good teams and played solid nickel corner.
I would just say this team has a lot of ground to cover. Like, that's I guess that's ultimately what I would say. I agree with you. I'm excited about what Justin Coleman can bring, even if it isn't a 26-year-old Justin Coleman. And instead is a Justin Coleman that's a little older, maybe a step slower. He's still a great nickel corner, and he knows your team. But I think, Jake, I think that I don't want people to get lost in the reality that there is a lot of ground to make up in how the Seahawks passing defense has been and where it needs to be in order for this team to be successful. You don't just need to be passable, no pun intended. You need to go from being 31st against the pass, which you were in each of the last two seasons, to like a top five unit. If you're not going to have a quarterback, or if you want to hedge your bets and try to make the defense as good as possible because you don't know what you're going to get from Locke and Smith, you need to be a top five unit.
Yeah.
That is so much. From 31st to 5, that's not just coaching. That's not just a new defensive coordinator. That's not just bringing in Carl Scott and Sean Desai. That is genuinely, genuinely having great players.
Yes.
So who do you have that you can look at and say, that guy can take you from 31 to 5? Right now, as much as I love these stories, I don't know that I necessarily see that guy. That's what I mean when I talk about corners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you're dead on with that. The last thing that I'll say in regards to this discussion is, you know, young guys that you need to step up. I think the 253 nailed it with their text saying the two new tackles need to be good for this offense to have a chance. Mm-hmm. You're 100% right on that. You know, you need these two, you know, young rookies in Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas to come in and be solid bookend tackles for you out of the jump if you want to have a chance offensively to be able to keep pace with everyone else in this league. If you want to play a physical brand of football and you want to be able to run the ball well, well, these two rookies are going to have to make that transition from air raid systems to an NFL outside zone scheme and do that extremely well and seamlessly so that guys like Rashad Penny and Ken Walker and hopefully you're crossing your fingers, Chris Carson, can be great contributors for this team. Because if you can't, you're then going to have to be very reliant on Geno Smith, Drew Lock. And then again, you're still relying on two rookies to pass protect in a very difficult league where there are so many great edge rushers within your division and on the schedule that you're going to play. So these two new tackles, I 100% agree with the 253. They have to be the real deal. They have to be good. And they don't have to be the finished product in year one, but they have to be good. They have to be passable.
Yeah. Another text in from the 425. Happy birthday, Stacy. Oh my God, you guys, I can't believe we are even talking about that. I'm so embarrassed. I didn't even think to mention
that's
it.
That's your number.
No, what? This hour of Jake and Stacy's brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, what do you hope to learn more from the Seahawks OTAs over the next 2 weeks?
Well, what I hope to learn more about is I want to learn more about the secondary. We just talked about the corners. I want to learn more about these guys. Is there anyone that is truly standing out? Someone that's coming in and saying, and the coaching staff going, wow, look at this guy. Look at what he has done. Whether it's Trey Brown coming back from knee surgery and this guy looks great and he looks fresh and ready to roll, or it's Kobe Bryant or Tyreek Woolen who are coming in and really impressing. Sidney Jones maybe making that next step, or Artie Burns who came from Chicago with Sean Desai, who's coming in and playing that position very nicely. I want to see somebody stand out at the cornerback position. Stacy, truly stand out. Not like last year where we had to try and make up something of, you know, Trey Flowers having the best camp of his life. He did not. Just no one stepped up at that position. I want to see someone really take ownership of that group and someone really stand out. That's what I hope we learn over the next 2 weeks at OTAs. And obviously, we are all paying attention to the quarterback situation with Drew Lock and Geno Smith.
Second down. Aaron Donald on the I Am Athlete podcast said he's, quote, at peace with potential retirement if contract negotiations go sideways with the Rams. Do you believe him?
No, I do not believe him. I do not believe Aaron Donald is going to walk away. I do not believe that the Rams are going to, you know, fumble this contract negotiation up unless Aaron Donald is just asking for the moon, right? I just don't see that Aaron Donald's going to be at peace so much so that he says, Stacey, you know what? You guys need to hit my number. If you can't hit this number, I'm walking away from the game. I would be utterly shocked when this team has all the makings of being a Super Bowl team again. How do you walk away from that? I mean, Aaron Donald is one of the ultimate competitors. He's one of the greatest players to ever play this game. You don't walk away from Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. You don't walk away from that chance to legitimately go and capture another one. And it would be one thing if they lost the Super Bowl and they're trying to regroup the band back together again and do it.
Yeah.
That's difficult. But winning a Super Bowl and going back to it, that's more doable with the type of team that they've been able to put together. I just can't imagine Aaron Donald being at peace with that.
Third down. Are you sure this is the question you want?
Oh, yes.
Jake, third down. If you were to compare the Seahawks to any character or jet in Top Gun, who would they be and why?
Wow, or jet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Look, what I would say is that there were a few different planes that were flown.
Okay. Got it.
So what I would just say is that there were F-14s, there were F-18s, and then they had a fifth generation plane, which was awesome.
Riveting. That's awesome.
So if I'm going to compare them, the F-14 is going to be Al Woods, because that it's an older plane. It still gets the job done and still can perform at a high level. Al Woods last year showed that even at his age of being 34 years old, going to be 35 this year, that you can still put together really solid performances. And I think Al Woods would be the perfect comp to that. F-18, you're looking at Quandre Diggs and Tyler Lockett.
Of course, I could have told you.
They're not the newest generation, right? But still really, really good football players, right? That can get after it, make big plays, make things happen. And then the fifth generation, the newest type of plane.
Spoiler
that could do everything.
Yeah.
DK Metcalf. I mean, DK Metcalf's just a freak of nature, right? I mean, just created out of a lab, doing things that you never thought was possible, and you know, a body that just doesn't even make sense, right? I mean, you're in person with this guy, and you're just like, I don't get it. I don't understand how this could physically be possible. And that's DK Metcalf. So that is my breakdown. If you ever wanted to hear it,
yeah. I don't mean this as hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean this is a completely serious takeaway.
Okay.
That I'm absolutely sincere about. I have never seen anyone love anything as much as you love Top Gun.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that there are other people that might be more obsessed with the franchise than I am. That's just how good of a movie
Curtis.
It was. I'm serious. There are more people that are obsessed with the franchise than me. But
yeah, there's a morning show on this station that is more obsessed.
Yeah.
It's the whole being a Gen X thing.
Yeah.
Look.
I would say that's a generational thing for myself.
I love Top Gun, the original, but this one, I mean, I'm sorry for all the you know, originals out there, but this one was better.
Got it.
Like, it just was better. It was so good.
Riveting.
So good.
Fourth down.
Stacey, you got to see it. You can't just...
No, I did see Top Gun when it came out on Netflix, like, a couple years ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so I did watch it. It was good. I mean, it was fine. The volleyball scene was funny. I thought it was very rude that he showed up to the love interest's home and immediately said, I'm going to go shower, and used her facility. Like,
yeah,
what?
I mean,
how
that
rude.
I mean, that's it. What do you mean rude? I mean, he's just, it's a power play.
I guess.
It worked out. But I would say that if you've seen the first, then you have to see the second.
Right.
And you will like the second a lot.
Cool, I promise.
I promise.
Coming up in the timeline, we're going to be talking about a fight that happened. And Curtis is calling it the beef of our time, is what he's calling it. So for your fourth down, Jake, which is always kind of a fun question, your favorite feud or fight of all time?
Wow.
Yeah.
Favorite
There's a lot of choices.
Oh, my gosh.
50 Cent and Floyd Mayweather is one of my favorites.
Really?
That's a good one. 50 Cent challenged him to read a page from Harry Potter.
Because he knows Floyd Mayweather doesn't know how to read.
Oh, my gosh.
Didn't you say, like, I will give $100,000 to
the
charity
of your choice if you can read a page of Harry Potter successfully?
Wow. That is... That is crazy.
Like, if Floyd Mayweather were a nicer guy, I'd feel bad about making fun of his illiteracy.
Sure.
But
I think
he's a terrible person.
I honestly think one of my favorite feuds of all time is Curtis Rogers against Mike Davis.
That's
one of my all-time favorite feuds.
That's a good
feuds.
One.
If you don't know the backstory on this, Curtis Rogers soloing it up, because that's what my man does. He's just a beast. He can hold
solo.
It down. On
that was
the
like
night
4
show,
years ago,
right?
Yeah. Four
it was
years.
It was a weekday, right? It was one
it was definitely in the middle of the week.
And of course, neither of us were there, so you were starting fights.
And you were talking about Mike Davis, right?
No, that's the thing is I wasn't talking about him.
Oh, you
and he was mad that I wasn't talking about him. I was talking about the Seahawks running back group at the time and mentioned everybody but him.
And that's what
got him mad.
And he was listening?
Oh, yeah, he was absolutely listening. He was like, thanks for the motivation, at the station Twitter handle, and we all get in the next day, and we look at the timestamp when he sent it. It was like 8:30 at night or something,
which is when
I was on the air, and I was like, oh, is that something I said? And then I'm re-racking my brain, and I'm like, I don't remember calling him out at all last night. I listened to the audio. Didn't happen. I didn't call him out at all. And then I was like, oh, that's why he's mad, is because I didn't mention his name.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a narcissist.
Oh,
because
God,
he is
Curtis.
Selfish. Because he's
no.
a me guy.
No.
He's a glory boy.
No.
Oh,
that's what
here we go.
No.
Here we go.
No.
And then Curtis Rogers always throwing out the casual sleeping on Mike Davis tweet every now and then.
Joey in Salt Lake, what's more epic than Jake versus Troy Aikman? Well, that's a one-sided rivalry.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
It's one-sided.
Yeah.
It's very much one-sided.
Well, coming up in the timeline, I will tell you what's happening with the newest feud. And by the way, it unfolded on the field before a game. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacey's brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. It is The Timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. The top story you're going to see, by the way, and hear about, the beef of our time. Reds outfielder Tommy Pham slapped Giants outfielder Jacques Peterson over a long-standing fantasy football disagreement. Now, this ended up happening. We saw an update via tweet, and it was sent to a work thread initially, and I saw it, Curtis, and I was, I think, at the game when I saw this, and I thought, no, this can't be a real tweet. There's no way this is real news.
Well, it started off with the news that Tommy Pham had slapped Jacques Peterson.
Yes.
What happened? What's
happening? You're right. Wait, I'm sorry. What? And I imagined him like slapping him across the face.
Right.
Like an extended arm, cartoonish slap across the face.
I think it was friend of the show, C. Trent Rosecrans.
Yes.
Who follows the Reds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Said something to the effect that this all stems from a fantasy football league that these two are in.
Thankfully, fantasy football and not fantasy baseball.
Yeah. I don't know if you can get away with that playing baseball.
Jacques Peterson, explaining the fantasy football beef here.
I put somebody, a player, on the injured reserve when they were listed as out and added another player. There was a text message in the group saying that I was cheating. Because I was stashing players on my bench. I don't know, I looked up the rules and sent a screenshot of the rules, how it says that when a player is ruled out, you're allowed to put him on the IR, and that's all I was doing. And then it just so happened that he had a player, Jeff Wilson, who was out, and he had him on the IR, and I said, you literally have the same thing on your team, on your bench. And then I guess he was in two leagues, and in one of them he was on the IR and one of them he wasn't. So maybe that was a confusion, but on the ESPN league we were in, it was listed as out. So it's like it feels very similar to what I did. And that was basically all of it. There's not much more to it.
Look, who among us has not accused a fantasy football teammate of cheating and stashing players? You know what I mean? And I appreciate him clarifying that it was Jeff Wilson, 49ers running back Jeff Wilson, like making it clear, like, not only am I going to tell you what happened, I'm going to be so detailed about exactly what happened, including like what I did, sending a script. I like the pass. Nothing says fantasy football like sending to a group text of your fantasy football league a screenshot of the rules. You know it's football season when two people in your fantasy league are arguing back and forth in a group text and everyone else is quiet.
This is one of the dumbest things and the most awesome things I've ever heard of in my life.
I love it.
Okay, who looks like a bigger loser?
Both of them. The answer is both. And the answer is all of us.
Why is both of them? Jock Peterson, it looks like he did nothing wrong, and Tommy Pham.
Wait a minute.
I don't know fantasy rules here. So what did Jock do that was so deserving of losing your mind over that?
I don't think he did anything wrong. I have pit players. If a player goes on IR and it's not like a great player who's coming back, I usually drop him because it's like, I don't know if this guy's coming back. If a player is out and I need to make roster moves, I don't see what's wrong with putting that player on IR because you can take guys off. Like, I've always done that. Like, if a player's out, he's injured, he's going to be out for a while. Like, what? That's what it's for. It's for making – it's not literally IR where you have to follow, like, your dumb IR league rules. It's just to put a player who's injured.
Okay. So where did he go wrong?
Well, Tommy Pham explains here why he slapped him.
Okay. Slapped Josh. He did some shit I don't condone, so – I had to address it.
What was that?
You know, there was some shit that went on in fantasy, you know, but what he forgot to tell you guys too, you know, he said some disrespectful shit in a text message, and I called him out on it. So it was regarding, you know, my former team.
So it was, he said some stuff about...
I just said it, plain and clear.
Okay, so it wasn't anything like...
regarding my former team. So I didn't like that, and I didn't like the schedule going on in the fantasy. We had too much money on the line, you know, so you look at it like, you know, there's a code. You win my money, then you're going to say some disrespectful shit. You know, there's a code to this.
From Yahoo Sports, who writes about the exchange, this is the backstory. He kind of came up and said, "You remember from last year?" And I said, "Yeah, fantasy football." And he said, "Yeah." And then he slapped him across the face. So it sounds like to Tommy Pham, he's saying it's not just that he violated the rules to him. It's that it wasn't just sending a screenshot saying these are the rules. It was maybe saying some disrespectful stuff.
And it was a gif making fun of the Padres
as they were collapsing that year.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry. There is nothing here that makes Jock Peterson look bad. Like, I just think like this is the weirdest thing that could have possibly have happened. And Tommy Pham needs to chill out. Like, come on, bro.
Yeah.
You got to chill out. You were so out of line and taking this so personal. It is just over the top. It is that friend or the person in the group chat that everyone rolls their eyes at because it's like, dude, you are taking this way too seriously and way too personal when it wasn't meant to be that way at all. It sounds like Tommy Pham can't take a joke whatsoever. And I wonder how he was doing in his fantasy league, because it sounds like this was also a guy being mad about potentially losing out on money. When he probably wasn't even in the lead in his fantasy football league.
Usually
of guy Tommy Pham is.
Look, you usually break even if you finish, third in a league?
Yeah.
You double your money if you get second, and then you win the pot if you're first. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it normally goes. I would imagine Tommy Pham kind of on the verge of either getting his money back or potentially doubling it.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen play out, and also one of the strangest things. I just can't believe professional baseball players got into a fight, or Tommy Pham slapped him across the face over a fantasy football league, and just silly stuff in a group chat. Like, it blows my mind. It's so funny.
Next story here in the timeline. Did a tribute or apology even happen if Nick Castellanos didn't hit a home run during it?
The gold chair, which will sit vacant here at Citizens Bank Park, honoring those who paid the ultimate sacrifice. Castellanos rips one to deep left field. It is gone!
Nick.
This literally, guy wait, no, I want you to listen to the timing.
Never misses.
The timing of it. The timing of it is literally a period on the sentence.
The gold chair, which will sit vacant here at Citizens Bank Park, honoring those who paid the ultimate sacrifice. Castellanos rips one to deep left field. It is gone!
Just all within one breath.
Yes, it is. This guy never misses. I swear
it's
that
uncanny.
The producers set this whole thing up. They have to, at this point, be in on the joke.
Just like feeding anecdotes.
All right, like, every time he's up to bat, they're like, okay, do something here where, like, potentially he could, if he gets a home run or a hit or anything, it'll be during our tribute.
Yes. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's just no way. How does Castellanos keep doing this? This is one of the greatest achievements that I've ever witnessed in professional sports, and I don't even know what the statistics are, right? It's just the fact that he continues to keep showing up in these moments. He understands the assignment 100%. He's just got this sixth sense about him, right? He doesn't even know the broadcast, what they're doing. He's like, yep, it's home run time. Drive to deep left field. Let's go.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. All right, what can you take away from the Mariners' series win over the Astros? What can you really take away about this team? Well, we've been trying to figure it out. We're going to continue that next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
What do you take away from this series win over the Astros when you're a team that's still on the bottom looking up? That's where the Seattle Mariners are. They were really, really struggling over the last month, had one of the worst records in all of MLB. Nothing was going right outside of some solid performances from individual players, but we watched them head into this series, knowing that they needed to get a win soon, especially coming off an ugly series loss against the A's, and they ended up doing it, surprisingly, even with a win against Verlander to open the series. But how much can you really take?
How much can you really take?
Yeah, you really take away from it?
I mean, that's the thing is there. I think individual performances you can take away. I think the hopes and dreams of what this team can be, you can take away. But I don't believe you can make any definitive statements based off of this one series, based off of what we've seen from this team over the last month. And then having the series against the Houston Astros and it playing out beautifully for them, mm-hmm. They win the series, a three game series, and they, you know, in two of these games, I mean, they are mashing the ball, right? Mashing the ball, and starting pitching had been great throughout. So I think that, you know, we're going to get into our likes and dislikes here in a second, but the only positive about this happening, Stacey, is that hopefully at some point we can play, you know, the Drake song, Started From the Bottom, Now We're Here. That's about
it. Yeah, started from the bottom, now you're still at the bottom is where the Mariners are right now, which is still with a great beat.
But, Stacey, there's room for them to go up.
You can only go up.
And they could find themselves in that situation, and then we're like, whoa, how did we get here, right? Like, that was fun last year. Maybe we can do it again. But I would say legitimate takeaways, right? Likes and dislikes to this, you know, series overall. I gave you Ty France, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, what do you have for me? What can you deliver? What did you like about the series? And then I've got a clear dislike that I need to get off my chest.
I loved, not just liked, I loved seeing Kyle Lewis get out there. And not only get out there, but I worried. So when he made his debut, he had two hits, but didn't account for a run, obviously didn't have a home run. Watching him go from run the bases, I don't think he got further than second in those games. But watching him run the bases was
he did one. I'm trying to remember where the hit was. He was on first base and he got to third.
I want to say it was like
he would have scored had it been anybody else.
Yeah, and it was sad to see because you know that he used to have great speed. He used to be so wonderful there. And it's also clear that he's still recovering, that he's still coming back. And he's so young. So part of you is just working in this industry. You see athletes that are so young and their bodies just get destroyed and your heart just breaks for them. But I will say two things. Number one, it was great seeing he still has power. Not only did he get two hits on that debut when he returned, but to be able to get back-to-back home runs on Friday and Saturday, that was huge.
Can we listen to both of them?
Yeah, we
I mean, those were so much fun.
So I'll start with this one, 441-foot, two-run home run off of Verlander.
The stretch and the 1-2. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left center field. Brantley going back, looking up. Goodbye, baseball, underneath the out-of-town scoreboard. Holy smokes, Kyle Lewis with his first home run of the 2022 season, his third hit of the year, and he hits a two-run home run off of Justin Verlander.
Now, the one on Saturday went into the upper deck. Want to hear that one?
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
But here comes the pinch.
Swing, hammered, goodbye, forget about it. This is destroyed. Way back and gone up to the upper deck. Kyle Lewis is back. He has homered in back-to-back games. And he just took a foam finger out there in the bleachers. It's 2-0 Mariners in the bottom of the second.
Smoked it.
If Kyle Lewis can continue to produce at the plate, it's okay if he's not the best base runner anymore or if he's still coming back, because he's bringing at least enough power, at least mm-hmm. enough talent to help you, because you need the help, and he provides that.
He certainly does, and it's a huge difference with him in the lineup. Mm-hmm. And this correlates into my dislike. This has nothing to do with what happened in the series, but I can't help but look at Kyle Lewis and watch him and see the impact that he has in this lineup and not seriously miss Mitch Haniger. Watch him and be and think to myself, gosh, what would this team look like if Mitch Haniger was healthy and if Kyle Lewis, if Mitch Haniger could be a part of this team right now that Kyle Lewis is up with? Because then you would have eight legitimate bats in your lineup, and that would be a huge difference for this team. I mean, eight big league at bats, and that would be a welcome sight for this team. And, you know, it'll be exciting when Haniger is able to return, but gosh, it just makes you miss that element and want him to be healthy so bad, to be paired with this group. And you could have a fun, exciting lineup with everybody coming together. But it's not a dislike. It's just from the series in particular, it's just something that you're missing out on, right? And that's something that just kept popping up and continues to pop up while you have Kyle Lewis here, and just seeing how big of a difference one more, not even just dominant bat, just a pro bat can do for your team.
Did you want to get to quickly in the last 2 minutes here one thing that you didn't especially like? Because we got to do likes and dislikes.
Yeah. I would say that let me get to a like first. I gave you Ty France. I'm going to give you Julio Rodriguez as well. How do you not love Julio Rodriguez's performance over the course of this series and honestly for the course of May? I mean, you look at it, what he was able to do over the month, and here's Alex Mayer, the great Alex Mayer, is the baseball information coordinator for the Mariners. He tweets out today, Julio Rodriguez leads Major League Baseball rookies in WRC Plus with 160, hits 33, home runs 6, stolen bases 5, and total bases 56 since May 1st. Since May 1st, Julio Rodriguez has been an absolute all-star, and we'll see if he can continue on this pace, but he's just making everything look so easy. And I do think it's hard to take it for granted after, you know, all the hardship that you've had over the last 20 years. But what Julio Rodriguez is doing over the course of this month, this soon in his career, has been so much fun to watch. And to watch him go oppo on Justin mm-hmm. Verlander to kick that thing off, let's go cut number one. I mean, gosh, that was amazing to see. And this kid's power and talent is just off the charts.
Verlander from the stretch. Here's the pitch. The Julio swing and a fly ball deep into right field. Tucker going back to the warning track near the wall. Goodbye, baseball. Julio Rodriguez. And opposite field. Two-run home run here in the bottom of the first off of Verlander.
Verlander from the stretch. Here's the pitch.
The Mariners have a 2-0 lead here in the bottom of the first inning for Julio. There is home run number 6 and a standing ovation from the fans here at T-Mobile Park.
I mean, it's so much fun to watch this kid, and he's only going to continue to get better and better. That was one takeaway again when you walk away from the series and you're just like, man, this kid has all the stuff, and he's going to be a great one for a very, very long time.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners begin a 3-series road trip today in Baltimore. George Kirby gets the start against Brian Baker, who Curtis said that's not a real name. But
that's a made-up Brian.
No, that's a real Brian. All Brians are real Brians. First pitch is at 4:05
p.m. Starting to think one Brian isn't real.
Brian Baker. Pre-game show starts at 3 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. So here's the deal. It is my birthday, and I'm not one to call attention to myself, but it is my birthday. However, because I am a giver and a generous person, I am willing to extend some of my birthday wishes to you guys so that we can all make a couple wishes. So
really?
We're going to make some wishes, some birthday wishes, for what we want to see, not just in this week of Seattle sports, but in this series against the Orioles. Take a bit of a look ahead. That's next.